And now for a change of pace. She's everything I need. That is sensitive to you, but she's old enough for me. In the mid-80s, heavy metal ruled, and the band Winger topped the charts. Kip Winger, the band's leader, was a teen icon with long hair, skin-tight pants, and a gleaming smile. That was before grunge wiped heavy metal off the musical landscape and Winger became a laughingstock on Beavis and Butthead. Well, today, Kip Winger is back on top of the charts, the classical charts. This is an orchestral piece off Kip Winger's new classical CD, Conversations with Nijinsky. It debuted at number one on iTunes. The music's performed by the San Francisco Ballet Orchestra. And right now, a lot of old metal fans are probably thinking, Kip Winger? Ballet?
So I started taking ballet at 16 because a girlfriend of mine wanted to take ballet, but none of her girlfriends would take it with her. And I love an adventure, so, you know, let's try it. And I got into the ballet studio, and here comes Stravinsky and Ravel and Debussy and Tchaikovsky, and I'm looking at these people jumping around doing these amazing athletic things, really.
Did you like it?
I took it like a duck to water. I was like, this is me. I'm home. This is totally where I belong.
I read you were a soloist with the Colorado State Ballet.
Well, like in the late 70s, there's not a lot of guys in ballet, you know, so they recruited me into the company, and I became a soloist in the company. And had my training started earlier and I had better training, I probably could have done it for a career.
That's funny because I was just having read that in the liner notes for this CD. I then looked back at some of the classic Winger music videos and it hadn't really hit me before, but you know, you're doing moves that I don't know if they qualify quite as pirouettes.
It's all ballet. It's all ballet. I was the Peter Pan of rock. You know, double pirouette to the knee, kick my leg over. Every time I go across the floor, I'm doing, you know, a certain wall step.
Did your fans or even your bandmates know that?
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of girls come up to me and say, you took ballet, didn't you? And I'm like, yeah, I did.
But seriously, wouldn't that have ruined your cred? If
it totally ruined my cred. Well, look what happened. I mean, I became the geek on Beavis and Butthead, you know. And
Being too pretty?
I don't know. I mean, it was just one of those things where, like, the rock guys, no, that's not cool, man. You know, they didn't think it was cool because you had to stand there in a leather jacket with a chain and...
Did you ever have managers or even bandmates come to you and say, could you
tone it down?
Did they say that?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, they totally did.
I wanted to ask you about the first piece on the classical CD, Conversations with Nijinsky. They're both some really hard-driving, big pieces with some dissonance in sections. And then there's some sections which are so delicate, so lyrical and graceful.
Yeah, thank you. When I started listening to rock, with orchestral music, I kept trying to find somebody who can make the orchestra rock. Very hard to find. There's a couple composers that can do it.
Who?
Well, I was in Amsterdam. When I travel, especially in Europe, and I have a day off, I always try to go see the symphony of the city. And in Amsterdam is one of the best in the world. So I went to see a program, and there was a piece at the end of the program when I was going to leave because I didn't know the composer named Honegger. Who's this Honegger? I don't know. Maybe I'll leave. Maybe I'll stay. So I stay, and here comes the third symphony by Honegger, and it just blew me away. And that was the first time I heard in the first movement somebody who could make the orchestra sound like a heavy metal band. And it was like this sound. I was like, this is what I've been looking for.
But are there sections on the CD where you feel like, there, I did it. I've got the orchestra sounding like a heavy metal band?
In the first movement of Nijinsky, it is a heavy metal riff. If I put that on Reb's guitar, it would be like. So that's that is what I was trying to do.
See, I was thinking some of those sections, to me, they feel so physical. I could practically see Nijinsky or some dancer kind of striding across a stage. Do you see dance when you're, like, especially if you're writing those pieces?
Yes. I literally get up in my studio and dance around and do some moves. I'm terrible now. That's how I feel the music and I see it when I write it.
Is that part of the connection to heavy metal? Because heavy metal, you know, it's a rock music that you can feel all the way into your body. Maybe it all is, but I think of heavy metal especially as being very physical.
As you're speaking, I'm hearing a piece of music that wants to be written from what you're saying, because the energy and the feeling of a electric guitar through a Marshall amp is this visceral thing that just hits you at a primal level, and it's very challenging to put that in an orchestra piece. And I totally lost my train of thought when you were talking, because I heard this thing happening that I missed.
You know what I love about what you're saying is you're not putting down rock music.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
you're not saying, yeah, well, that's the simple art form and orchestral is the highest form of music.
No. Rock music is amazing and it reaches so many people, rock and pop. I mean, I'm not prejudiced against any kind of music.
So as long as we referenced the Beavis and Butthead thing, there was a period of time when grunge was coming in and suddenly the look you guys had was going out fast, so that Beavis and Butthead made fun of you. Metallica, they threw darts at your poster something. So I would imagine that there might have been a period of time when it hurt or was embarrassing to look back.
I never felt embarrassed of our band. I've got incredible musicians in my band. And what we were doing was a symptom of the time. So the problem was we came late. So then grunge came and wiped it all out. And it did hit me personally. There was a point where I basically didn't have enough self-esteem to walk on stage, you know. Mm-hmm. But not only that, I didn't need to walk on stage because there was no gigs. I mean, we were literally wiped off the face of the earth. Being on the radio, gone, and lost my record deal, lost my publishing. Nobody wanted to book that kind of music. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just me, it was all the other bands that were like us. It was a very tough time. And for me, personally, because I had money and stuff, so it wasn't like, I better go get a job at McDonald's. It was like, okay, what am I going to do now? And for me, it was like, I'm going to get back to studying music, which is what I've always been in this for anyway. So ironically, the way it happened for me, it gave me the time it took to go get my music chops where I really wanted them to be. So the universe works real strange. That's not saying I didn't have a big ego about it. It was definitely tough for many years.
We heard some of your classical music. You've got instruments here.
We do. What should we play? You want to play Down Incognito or you want to do the instrumental one?
Let's do free.
Free?
Yeah.
So in Egypt, it's kind of a long story. My first wife passed away in a car wreck in 96 in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and she was German, so I had to take her back to Germany, and we had the funeral in Berlin, and it was a very bleak time, and it was in the dark ages of what I refer to them. With my career and all that, and so everything was very sad. And I was in Berlin, and her mom said, "You need the sun. You should go to Egypt." So I bought a ticket, and I went to Egypt and landed in Cairo at 3 a.m. with nowhere to go. And it was the perfect place to go at that time because the Egyptians worship the dead. And I spent about 3 weeks. I landed at the airport, and, you know, you get accosted by everybody going, "We'll sell you this thing, this package, do this. It's 10 days in a thing and the greatest hotel and all that." And I found these three dudes. It was like $1,200 for 3 weeks or something. So I was like, "Okay, take me wherever you want to go," because I didn't care. I mean, I didn't care about much of anything at that point. But I used to carry a DAT player with me and record everything. Huh. And I had my guitar with me, and I did some like impromptu jam sessions with people on the street. And they were the most interesting groups of musicians. And I had never really been attuned to Middle Eastern scales and this kind of thing. And, you know, it's interesting because they just jam it on the streets, and it's incredible. I mean, talk about charming the snake. I mean, it's really, that's kind of where I got that term, actually. So,
is music kind of, it's not just the notes, it's not just the technicality. It sounds like beyond that, there's something else that's energy.
It is. I mean, it's magic. It's the universal language of all of creation, in my view. And I can't tell you where it comes from. And any artist would tell you that they're just, quote, taking dictation. You've heard that a million mm-hmm. times, right? But it really is like that. So the cliches became cliches because they are true.
Kip Winger is busy making all kinds of music today. He tours with his old band. They just did 2 sold-out concerts in Japan. He also plays acoustically. That was him in our studio with jazz musician Ben Hans. And let's close with the last track from his new classical CD. This is the track called A Parting Grace. Thanks for listening today. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe heard something worth sharing. To the Best of Our Knowledge comes to you from Wisconsin Public Radio. Charles Monroe Kane produced this hour. He had help from Raymond Tungekar, Craig Ely, Doug Gordon, and John Merfeld. Our theme music comes from Steve Mullen from Walk West Music. Kirill Owen is our technical director. Steve Paulson is our executive producer, and I'm Ann Strainchamps. We'll be back next week.
Public Radio International.